5:30, so I suggest we go ahead and convene the Public Works Advisory Board meeting. Today is September 20th. This is a regular meeting. And we're going to begin as we usually do with a roll call and quorum check.
Thank you. Board Member Ingrafia?
Yes.
Board Member Goldman?
Yes.
Board Member Irwin?
Yes.
Board Member Gaffney?
Yes.
Board Member Hill? And Chair Beal?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. And just to note, we do have a quorum with Robert Nava, who is absent today.
And before we begin, I do want to welcome our new board member, Doug Hill. And we customarily begin with a moment of silence, so we'll go ahead with that right now. Thank you. All right, and our next event here is our Pledge of Allegiance. If any board member would like to volunteer to lead us, that would be appreciated. Thank you all. So before we begin with the agenda, I'll just ask if any board members have any announcements they would like to make.
I would like to announce that this Saturday at the library, we're having an event called Books and Beyond to acquaint people, let people know all the things that the library has to offer besides just borrowing books and getting movies and reading newspapers. Did you know that you could renew your passport through the library? Did you know that there's a library of things where you could check out tools that you might need? You can borrow a sewing machine through the library. And now they're even starting a literacy program. So that's going to be this Saturday at the library from 10 to 12. Thank you.
And I will be missing the next meeting because I'll be on vacation.
Congratulations. Enjoy your vacation. In that regard, this isn't really an announcement, but I'm pretty sure I had asked for an excused absence. I was on vacation for the last meeting. I didn't see that on the agenda, but perhaps we could note it for a future item.
Yes, I was going to get in touch with you about that to get the formal request, and then we can put it on the agenda for the next time.
Sure, no problem. Thank you. Any other board announcements? Okay, other than welcome, Doug. Does the Public Works Department have any announcements they'd like to make?
Yes, Chair Beal, thank you. Just want to note Greg Wallach is out tonight, so I'll be stepping in to give a couple updates. We did have our first community meeting for the LRSP, or Local Roadway Safety Plan. There was a lot of information given as far as crash data and other things, some time for a Q&A. But we also realized that we could have used more time for that purpose. So we will be doing our second community meeting. We had originally scheduled it to be at the PWAB, the October PWAB meeting, but we've since decided we're going to have its own meeting separate from PWAB. So the date has not been determined, but it'll be likely the week after PWAB, sometime during that following week. So we'll make sure to post that on the city website on the Hot Topics, and also announce it at our next PWAB meeting, which is scheduled for Wednesday, October 18th. We also realized we had quite a few items that were filling up for October, so it would have been a little bit too much to do at that meeting as well. So, and I do want to remind the public and everyone that the interactive tool on the city website for the LRSP is still active and will be active for quite a while, up through probably certainly through the end of October, maybe even further. But and it is very user-friendly. It's easy to go in there and actually drag areas of concern, and it has icons based on whether it's a car or a bicycle or a pedestrian. So I do want to encourage the public to use that tool to input your concerns, because those are noted and will be looked at as we consider these improvements. You know, and ultimately, this LRSP is really our one of our you know, required documents to be able to qualify for bigger grant projects, where we look at ways to mitigate these issues we have around town. So, and then of course, welcome Member Hill to the board. Look forward to working with you. I believe that's all we have as far as department. Actually, one more announcement. We did have our maintenance manager start recently. So, and Greg will be formally introducing him at the next PWAB meeting. And his name is Carlos Mendoza. So, that's it.
Thank you. The next agenda item is a public comment that is available for any member of the public that would like to comment on items that we are not going to cover otherwise under our agenda today. So it looks like we have someone here. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is James Worthley. I am the planning director at the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, or SLOCOG. SLOCOG is the regional transportation planning agency in our region, and Mayor Wixom sits on our 12-member board. Now, transportation improvements are funded largely by the gas tax, but the gas tax is broken. 20 years worth of hybrids that pay less, plus 5 years or so of electric vehicles that pay zero, and many more are coming. By 2035, every new vehicle sold in California will be electric or non-polluting. In the year 2020, one out of five new cars sold in California was electric. They pay zero gas tax. That means less dollars to fix potholes or intersections or add bike lanes or sidewalks or safe routes to school or to expand transit or senior services. Looking forward, we're going to add 40,000 new people to our region. We're going to add more tourists to our region. And with them, we're going to add more problems that the broken gas tax can't pay for. We need a new path. Now, 25 California counties with 90% of Californians have passed a dedicated sales tax for transportation. The Monterey region, they put $13 million extra into their local roads and potholes. The Santa Cruz region just leveraged $115 million out of the state because they have a dedicated sales tax for transportation. We can't compete with that. Those two counties and Santa Barbara County is next to us, they average between $25 million and $50 million every year for transportation improvements, fixing roads, potholes, problems that we do not have. And they use their money, and they spend it, and they leverage it against state and federal funds to bring 3 times or 4 times or 10 times their dollars back to their regions. Again, we can't compete with them, and we have fallen behind. At this point, we are investigating and identifying what transportation improvements are most important to you and to the public. We have a website at localroadsfirst.com that will take your survey information, provide your input of what's most important, what's needed, and if there's a collection of enough identified items throughout our region, the 7 cities, an unincorporated county, we may see a sales tax measure go to the voters. Now, I understand that your pavement conditions index used to be 63 and now it's 60. It's moving in the wrong direction. It's going to cost more and more every year to fix it. And the longer we wait, the more it costs, the more we fall behind. Those counties in California that have a dedicated sales tax that we do not have, they're fixing their own problems, and the state doesn't care that we have our problems. They tell us, go fix it yourselves. That's where we stand. That's all I've got. Thank you. But I am happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Are there any other suggestions besides sales taxes to remedy that issue?
Property tax. There's no good options. When we look around the state and say, what have others done to fix this? 25 counties, the largest counties, have done it with a sales tax. And when you think about, hey, let's increase the gas tax, well, that's broken. Why would we increase something that's still broken? Or increase a property tax? Well, that takes nothing in from the tourists that should be helping us pay for the problems they create and the benefits that they use. Sales tax does that. Sales tax is more equal for the people that use our system, live or come here, whether you're driving an electric car or riding a bicycle or a tourist that comes from 200 miles away.
The challenge with the sales tax is that, unfortunately, it's a flat tax and not progressive. Are there any suggestions as to a possible progressive tax that might be used to finance this?
Not that we've seen in California. You're right. A sales tax that's imposed is a flat tax across the board for everybody. And a purchase of a $1,000 cell phone, smartphone, costs an additional $5 for that purchase. But there's never a good time to increase taxes. I'm sure if we asked the question, who wants to increase a tax, who does not want to increase a tax, we'd have 9 hands or 10 go up in this room alone. But waiting means we are just waiting for somebody to fix our problem, then that's not going to get fixed. What we've identified, though, is not fixing a pothole. It's not a good time to fix your tire or repair a tire that's blown out or an alignment either. It's never a good time. And that's going to hit the peer persons that have lower incomes just as much as a sales tax, if not more, because that pothole that blew their tire is going to be there tomorrow also, and the next day, and the day after that.
Are there suggestions as to progressive taxes coming from other states?
No, not that we've seen. Not for a regional tax like this. Can you elaborate just a little bit more? I want to make sure I'm talking about the right thing. Are you talking about electric vehicles?
Yeah. Or it sounds like is. To cover all vehicles rather than...
I think you're talking about miles of travel?
Yeah.
Okay, so California has been investigating a vehicle miles of travel tax. They've been investigating for 5 to 8 years now. I think I was part of the original pilot study back in 2017. They've made zero progress on it. The states that have made progress on it, what they've offered up is, hey, we're going to get rid of the gas tax and give you a choice, 4 or 5 choices. You pick what fits best for you. Do you want to pay a flat amount annually? Do you want to pay check your mileage and pay your mileage annually or monthly? Do you want to be tracked so that you have a chip or a computer in your car that identifies how far you're traveling and when you're traveling, where you're traveling? What's going to happen is everybody's going to pick the least costly item for them, because why not? And then they will pay that amount, which will not amount to the gas tax that's collecting out. The state has been horrible at increasing or keeping up with transportation costs. They increase the gas tax every year to keep up with inflation. And for the most part, we're pretty close to keeping up with inflation, but it doesn't keep up with the mileage or the high mileage vehicles that continue to erode how many gallons are purchased overall. So that means as we keep moving forward, it gets harder and harder to fund transportation because the state's not keeping up. And when we ask the state, and believe me, SLOCOG has asked the state, why don't you fix this problem? Their answer resoundingly is, we have fixed it. We've given you the opportunity to ask your voters if they want to change things. If they don't, well, that's too bad for you. If they do, then you fixed it. And with the VMT, I'm hopeful that it stays status quo, but I don't think it will because everybody will have a choice and they'll pick the lowest option.
Thank you for your comment.
Thank you.
Do we have anyone watching virtually who would like to make a comment at this time?
Thank you, Chair Beal. There's currently no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, thank you. So we'll move then to agenda item A. This is our consent agenda. The only item we have is the question to approve the minutes from the last meeting in August. Would anyone like to have any discussion? And if not, would anyone like to make a motion regarding those minutes?
I will make a motion to approve the minutes as written.
I'll make a motion to second it.
Mm-mm. All right. If there's no discussion, we'll go ahead and take a vote. All in favor of approving the minutes?
Yes.
Aye. Aye.
None opposed. We approve the minutes. We're moving now. We're on agenda item B, which is our business items for today. B1 has to do with Senate Bill 1 funding project list. This is for fiscal year 2023 to 24, and it has to do with pavement management plan project. Do we have a presentation?
Yes, we do. Thank you, Chair Beal. We didn't really plan the timing of that comment from SLOCOG, but it's appropriate in that we're talking about SB1 funding and pavement in general. So. So tonight, the intent is to give you an idea of what we're spending the SB1 money on, and it is required by the law that was passed in 2017 that any RMRA or SB1 is the Senate bill funding should be declared on and passed by resolution by City Council for the fiscal year. Now that is a way to declare your intent. However, the state does recognize that things change. So throughout the year, if the project morphs into something else, you're not bound by that. It's just, but you do have to report every year what you do spend it on. So if the project does change and you add different roads or then that is reported in your annual report. So, again, this is something we're looking for PWAB to recommend to City Council, which will be at the City Council meeting next Tuesday. So, as far as the overview of what I'll be discussing, first we'll go over pavement condition and index, current projections. Next, talk about actual pavement management projects in process and future SB1 funding contributions by year, so you can actually see how much SB1 funds we do get, and to the point of the SLOCOG representative, the number has been static for the last couple years, and then a recommendation for SB1 funding allocation. It was about a year ago that we brought you a pavement update to both PWAB and City Council, and we've had a busy year in a different way. This year, we didn't do our pavement ratings yet. There's been a lot of course, the storms and aftermath after storms and looking at storm drains and other projects. So we will be doing pavement ratings at some point, but we haven't proceeded with those. But our Street Saver tool, which is a software program that we utilize to manage our pavement management system, does keep track of PCI, and there's a lot of equations and things that go into that, and each street has its own deterioration curve that it follows based on empirical formulas and just experience in the industry over time to give you a very good idea of what you would expect to see if we were to do a rating on all the streets. So using that tool, that's where the PCI of 60 is. If you remember last year, we were at 63. So it is quite concerning that our PCI is dropping so rapidly. And a lot of that has to do with if you remember the curve being somewhat flat at the top and then it dropping off right in the middle where PCI is between somewhere around 60 down to 40 is kind of your critical point where it just drops really quickly. So I think we're seeing a lot of that citywide. So collectively, we're at a PCI of 60, which is still in the fair at risk category, but we're getting quite closer to the poor category, which is not where we want to be. If we look at PCI, the color coding, red being the worst, being very poor, green being good, and then colors in between. If we look at our city streets, that's kind of the look we had. I think just a year ago, we had probably half as many very poor streets. So it's you know, the tool is saying that it's not getting any better. Those poor streets are getting worse. There's the middle of the city, and if you kind of see, the southern part of Morro Bay is in a little bit of better shape. The soils aren't as bad. I think we've discussed in the past how a lot of North Morro Bay roads were built, maybe not in a with the best road building technique. A lot of roads were just a even maybe an inch or two of asphalt on native or even some red rock, not really a class two aggregate base material. So we've seen premature deterioration and a lot of load related failures due to our three trucks a week of garbage and lots of freight. But that's the PCI kind of in the different parts of the city. As far as pavement management projects, we just completed our fiscal year 21-22 project, which I believe we've discussed in the past, the arterial digouts that we did throughout the city on Main Street, Harbor Street, Beach, South Bay Boulevard. We started construction in February, which is not always the best time to start construction, but because of some design issues with the project, we got it out to bid a little later. We got about 80% done in January in between storms. And then the remainder, we had to wait until, because of construction, there was a lot of contractors, or our contractor was very busy with emergency work. We weren't able to get it done until August. And quite frankly, South Bay Boulevard, the base layers needed that time to really dry out anyway, because it's just so close to to the bay there. Project closeout is in process, and total cost was $1.6 million, which was funded by SB1, Measure Q and E, some general fund, which helped with some of the emergency work that was storm-related. We added scope to the project because there was some damage on South Bay that affected the pavement, so we did some of that with funds from the general fund, from FHWA, which is Federal Highway Administration. We were able to secure some funds. There's a question mark there because we haven't been paid the funds yet, and I don't want to say that we have the funds until we have them in hand, but we have been given the green light to submit invoices for that. And then FEMA is still a question at this point because we're still very early in the FEMA process because we had two different events. We're still having site inspections. We might even have a future POAB. It'd be good to kind of give an update on FEMA because it's been a very drawn out and long process, as you would expect or as you've probably heard and Mr. Irwin knows very well. So the fiscal year 22-23 pavement capital project, that's our surface seal project that I would have hoped that we would have been able to do this summer, but with all of the other things going on, we're going to have to push it into the spring of next year. It's not a good thing to be trying to do surface seals in the rains if there's threat of rain. So we're still looking at the final list of streets on that, and I'll go into that in a minute. I actually wanted to announce we have a senior civil engineer who will be joining our team. So that's other news that I forgot to mention that and he will be starting in October, which will double our capital projects team and in order to get out some of these capital projects a little bit more efficiently. But so anyway, we're looking to advertise that in early 2023 with construction. Early 2024 with construction soon after. And a surface seal kind of encompasses all the different types of seals. We have slurry, you have chip seal. Those are probably the two most cost-effective that we'll be looking at for this project. And it's really looking at some of the roads in that good or just above fair category that we don't want to get and have accelerated deterioration. We need to seal them before they get any worse. So we're going to be trying to hit a lot of the city that has roads that are in fairly decent shape, but get a surface seal on to protect them and give longevity. We're going to be sealing the arterials that were done during the hotspot project. So we repaired the base failed areas where the load-related failures due to, mostly in the wheel tracks. You can see it on Main Street, South Bay, all those areas where we did spot repairs. Now we're going to do a final coat over the top so it looks consistent and then restripe with this project. And then also we'll be surface sealing other collectors and residential streets, approximately between 5 and 10 miles distributed evenly on appropriate streets throughout the city. So this is still in the works, and we'll be bringing that project back to PWAB when we actually get ready to put it out to bid. And that project, we're targeting $1.5 million from the 22-23 budget that's funded by SB1 Measure Q and E, LTF transit funds for streets, and then some money from a bike path fund, which we'll utilize for mostly looking at bike improvements to striping, so areas that we may not have clearly identified bike lanes or adding sharrows or other features that are for bringing awareness to bicyclists. So the fiscal year 23-24, which was the most recently approved budget, City Council increased the amount towards pavement management of $2.1 million fully loaded. Again, remembering back to our presentation last year, we need to be spending closer to $3 million a year to just to keep at our current PCI. And that was last year's debt. It could even be more, but that's just to keep static. So we're still falling short on that. We're going to continue to decline in case, unless we have another revenue source. But yes, we did get quite a bit more dedicated towards it. So what we're looking at for this, the next project, is some of these lower PCI roads actually doing full replacement. We may not be able to do a full base section in cases like some of the residential. Maybe it's not. That's something we're going to work with a pavement consultant to help us determine based on, you know, doing some core samples and other studies to see what is appropriate. But we're going to be doing full asphalt replacement on some of these streets, a lot of them in North Morro Bay that where the asphalt has just completely failed. And even our spot repairs from internal maintenance are just not holding up because there's nothing to pave it to. It's everything is just kind of falling apart. So I have spring 23, and that should be 24 advertised for bid. So what I'm hoping is that we get this project right behind the surface seal so that we kind of keep our paving program going through most of the summer and into fall of next year. Again, $2.1 million funded by some from SB1, but mostly our local measure Q&E. And then we have, of course, miscellaneous ongoing repairs, dig outs, skin patches, potholes that our internal staff do. But one thing that was added to the budget, the operating budget this year, was $180,000 dedicated to contract maintenance. So we're in the process of securing several contracts with local pavers to be able to do some of these bigger repairs that our staff are just not able to handle. And also with the surface seal, there might be areas we need to do some dig outs and repairs prior to actually sealing the street. So some of these residentials that have some localized failures that need to be addressed. So. Some photos from our arterial hotspot repair project. On the left, you have that, I believe that's on Pacific Street, one of the dig outs. And then in the middle is Coral Avenue. All these streets, again, are going to be surface sealed to kind of give that extra longevity. You know, we've addressed the base and the failed areas, and now we're essentially putting a thin coat over the top to kind of give the entire surface kind of a more homogeneous deterioration rate now that we've addressed the main areas of failure. So on the far right, we have South Bay Boulevard, which was recently completed there with the new striping. These are just some photos of what surface seals look like. I know that's not new to anyone here. If you're in Morro Bay, you've probably experienced a surface seal on, or maybe you haven't, but there's different types, as I mentioned, and we're going to be looking at the chip seal, which is an aggregate, and we'll likely use the finest, because one of the issues with chip seal is it's kind of rocky, and there's a lot of agencies that get too coarse on it. I think for our local roads, or you know, even our arterials, we can use a quarter inch rock, and then we're going to go over the surface with it. You can see on the far right, we do a fog coat over the rock to which will lock in the rock and give it a little bit better surface, and of course make the striping more pronounced for safety. So slurry is which you see on the left, the truck in the middle, and then on the left it's more of a mixed product. You have the sand and the oil emulsion and everything kind of mixed together, and then you have a spreader truck that just spreads it. So it's a little bit different technique. It's more cost effective than the chip, but in my experience, the chip seal is for areas that have a little bit higher volume traffic. It has a little bit better longevity, but it does cost a little more than the slurry. And again, $1.5 million is the target cost of this project. We have some maps with preliminary streets, but again, I put draft in the middle there so that if folks see that, we will be shifting around streets. This is not by any means a final list, but we utilize our Street Saver tool to kind of give us it looks at all of the PCI and kind of different factors for you to kind of come up with these lists. So I'll be working on refining this over the next few months. But you can see it's a pretty even distribution around the city. We will be, surface sealing those arterials. You can see South Bay there, the ones that we did the dig outs. So those are part of it, and then several others. So the fiscal year 23-24 project, I have a preliminary list. These are our, like, lowest PCI streets in the city. Not all of them, but these are some. So we have several that are under 30, which is not something to brag about. But and if any of you have driven these, you can kind of make sense of it. Even Surf Street, just not immediate outside here, but if you go up to, I believe it's Market, and then head towards Main Street, that section of Surf Street is, it's right there. It's the second from the bottom. It's a 28. And then the other side, on the east side, is even worse at 22. So so we're looking at right now, again, this is rough. We have to do a real more refined design and actually look at what the thicknesses of asphalt is going to be, if we're going to have to add any base. There's a lot of work that still needs to be done on the front end of this. But rough numbers, we're looking at, $12 to $15 a square foot, which is, for that area, it's, $1.9 to $2.3 million. And if you look at the length, 1.1 miles versus if you do a surface seal, 10 to 15 miles. So that's where your repair cost just grows astronomically when you have to do a rehab or a reconstruction. Again, these are the target streets at this point to be refined, and we'll bring back to PUEB before we actually list the projects for bid. So the SB1 is really the focus of this, although I wanted to give you kind of an update on pavement in general. I know it's a high priority of the city as far as council goals, and I think that's something we need to keep moving forward on. But SB1 expenditures by fiscal year, I've grouped 20 to 22. There's two fiscal years there. That was around COVID and prior to my time, so I wasn't able to find exactly per year, but there was no SB1 funds expended during that time. Basically, all capital projects kind of came to a standstill at that time during COVID, I think, except for the water reclamation facility. But so that's where the approximately $600,000 from SB1, it's, 2 or 3 years of funds. and that was for our $1.6 million total project. For the surface seal, we have a $267,000 coming from SB1. Again, it's not the driving funding source by any means. And then for this fiscal year, the 23-24 project, our projections are that we're going to get $260,000, so it's a little less. So again, not something that is looking as dependable or even, I think there was at one time these projections that the SB1 funds would continue to grow, and it's just not, it doesn't seem to be going, trending in that direction. So $260,000 on a $2.1 million project, that's a lot for the city to take on, and our city has stepped out and made sacrifices to be able to, give, almost $1.9 million of Measure Q and A, but we certainly need to give more towards this, and not sure where to find that fund. So that's a challenge we have still before us. So the recommendation is that the Public Works Advisory Board would advise Council to pass the resolution to utilize SB1 funding as detailed. Again, we've named these streets in the resolution, and that is required by SB1, but not necessarily, that doesn't necessarily lock you into that you have to use it on those streets, and we'll be coming back and actually discussing with PWAB what our final project will be. So I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Riddio. We'll now start with board questions, but before we jump right in, I would just want to ask for a clarification. You just kind of finished up. I think you answered my question, but I just want to make sure the public and everyone is very clear. We're not being asked to vote necessarily to endorse that specific list of projects. It's sort of worded a little differently in the agenda. The recommendation talks of approving the project list, and then the alternative speaks to not using the funds at all, which to me are not identical things, are not opposite from each other. So are we being asked to approve the project list, or are we being asked to approve the use of the funds generally for those projects and or other uses?
That's a good question. So we are asking that council, when they, well, in this case PWAB, approve that specific list, and the reason that is a specific list with service life, with the costs, needs to be included in a resolution and then sent to California Transportation Commission for them to release funds for utilization. That being said, they're very clear about, they understand that could change, and that resolution doesn't mean that if you don't use it on those streets, you lose the funds. It just means that your city, your jurisdiction has said, we are going to use the funds in this way, and it's a requirement of the law to do that. So does that answer your question?
Yes. So I think if we get to a point and we're being asked to make a motion, that the motion would be to approve the resolution that has been provided in the agenda.
Sure, we can make that modification to the language.
All right, thank you. And with that, you had some comments or questions?
Okay, I have a question. This is just a clarification, Eric. You were saying that you didn't do much on the roads this year, and you're going to wait until next year to next spring, which will in another fiscal year. So do you have So you got the money this year, and I'm sure it was used somewhere because there was a lot of road work done, and like you said, the dig outs and stuff like that. And the amount that the city budgeted, was that all used this year, or is that all being put over to when you're going to put out for bids in the spring and do the work in the fall, which will be in another fiscal year, so there will be more money, hopefully, being budgeted. Is that right? It's right now it's in a pot, and it's just sort of waiting.
Yeah, thank you for the question. I'll try to understand. Yeah, I think I understand your question. So when funds are budgeted for a certain fiscal year, if they don't get utilized because it's a capital project, unless we tell them we're not going to use the money, it carries over. So that all that merit money has carried over. So we have a large balance in our pavement management that's made up of several different fiscal year monies. And we try to keep them in their pots because the road work that was just recently completed was using previous fiscal year money, and that project was kind of created a couple years back. So we've kept that aside. But to answer your question, last year's money is still there. It wasn't used for anything else, and it's still dedicated for a surface seal project. Just because it's happening a little later doesn't mean we lost the money or it was used on other projects. So.
I just had a question about the complete new digouts in North Morro Bay, which look like to be more of the sections. Or any like curb and gutter or anything, or we're just talking strictly AC pavement for those sections and the roads?
That's a good question. It will likely, well, as far as North Morro Bay is concerned, there's only, I think, three lots that have curb, gutter, and sidewalk on them, you know, because of the Main Street spillover, I call it. At some time, there was a specific plan that there's only three lots that have frontage improvements, and that goes back to the just straight pavement, and there could be AC dike here and there as well. So if the curb ramps, and at one point there was a big push to upgrade curb ramps in North Morro Bay. There's, you can see that there was a project. I'm not aware of when the project was, but several years back to upgrade those. So if there are non-compliant ADA ramps, if you do a large improvement like a rehab, you would have to look at the making them compliant. As far as adding curb, gutter, sidewalk, not necessary unless it's, you know, areas that are pre-existing sidewalks. Like, to answer your question, we don't have to add sidewalk, curb, and gutter up those, yes. North Morro Bay.
So like in North Morro Bay, like parts of the city that doesn't have curb and gutter, or they have AC pavement in the right-of-way, is the right-of-way going to be repaired as well, you know, in between the, you know, the road and the property lines? Or is it just going to be kind of saw-cutted and new road and then kind of...
That's a good question. So as far as there are areas where pavement does spill over into the right-of-way, which isn't technically in the road, but we will be focusing on the actual road itself. It doesn't mean that there won't be some, you know, if it's not competent, then we have to go over a little bit. We may have to do that here and there within the right of way, of course. Mm-hmm. But we will not be doing, you know, paving people's, you know, parking areas. It's not the focus of the project, so.
I also didn't really notice any streets. Like, I mean, that was just the small list, but on the beach track area, like, that's got to be right close to 30 and in the 20s, it's, like, as well.
Yeah, Thanks for the question. And great observation. I think I'm glad you brought that up. So we will be probably later this year, if it's not at October, we might have a special meeting in November to discuss the beach tract. We have another project there that involves replacement of sewer mains, and that project really, how we do that project is still in discussion and going to be a subject of discussion, and a lot of those mains would likely go down these roads that we would be recently paving. So those have been, you know, you're exactly right. There are several, and Rennell is one of them that comes to mind. It's like the PCI is, I think it might even be 22 or 23. So those roads, I think for now, we're going to look at, you know, put a pause on that until that project goes in. And likely when we do the project would be the time to do the road work as well. So, you know, the sewer project will not fully fund pavement, you know, curb to curb. But if we have some road funds to where we, you know, it will do, you know, trench alignment and then a couple feet on either side. And then we would supplement the rest with funds, and that would be the time to do that type of project.
Well, I do know there's lots of natural springs under there as well on that area, so that, you know, whatever you're thinking as far as cost, I would say probably triple it for that area.
Well, you know, part of the, you know, this process is we'll be doing core samples to get the characteristics of the underlying soil, which I don't know if you know about R value, and it directly tells you what the structure should be if you were to put it back. And that's certainly a cost we'll have to look at, you know, when we start looking at the design. But it could be very costly on those streets.
And the last thing, just kind of looking at the map, you know, I understand of, you know, we don't want to get the good roads into the bad, you know, kind of thing. But instead of doing 50 roads randomly, like sticking with kind of a core and redoing them correctly, instead of having kind of two good roads pieced together with an old, like a crappy road, I think might be long-term beneficial, my opinion.
No, that's a good point. I've seen other jurisdictions where they do zones. I think Morro Bay has zones, at least I've seen in Straight Saver, where they target zones each year. One of the challenges is that you'll have a good road here, and then the one right next to it is terrible, and like even on the same, you know, break at the block, and then the one piece is like fully reconstructed, and then, you know, a section right next to it is not. So I think, you know, for designing a pavement project, having it all in the geographic same area makes sense for keeping costs down. Like that would ideally be the way to do it, to have, say, we do the north half of North Morro Bay one year and then the next half and kind of work that way. It's just, I think until we get roads into a shape where we can put them on a rotation, it might be more of this shotgun effect until. But I think I will take a look at, see if we can kind of consolidate areas a little bit more to keep costs down, you know, for the contractor.
Thank you.
I have a couple of questions because I know you wanted to back clean up, so I'll go ahead. Maybe a slightly related to the questions about curbs and gutters, but in terms of the flood damage, and I know some of that you might be able to get reimbursed on. I know there's I mean, I've personally witnessed damage from the storm that I suspect is not reimbursable because we can't necessarily make that direct connection. Is there a way to consider improvements to improve the longevity of those replaced roads? Like, are there other associated drainage type improvements so that we don't keep, getting into the cycle, assuming that the last season was not, a complete anomaly, but rather perhaps a harbinger of climate change, et cetera?
Very good question. It's something we are looking at. Storm drain, in much of Morro Bay, the street itself is the conduit for stormwater conveyance, and that's a problem for our pavement. The limited storm drains that we do have, about half of them are corrugated metal pipe, which are either failed or near failure. So we have several emergency storm drain replacements kind of on a backlog right now. We just finished one. We're getting ready. We're in design on two other ones. One at Sequoia Court and another one I just went down with our inspector today to look at a piece of Main Street. In that area where it flooded on Main and Preston Lane and the storm drains are severely undersized and most of them are completely deteriorated. It's going to take a lot of work to actually get a project and replace them, and that's something we've already we're working on with FEMA. We're also looking with Cal OES. They have a program called 404 mitigation. We already submitted on that for this other program. They're steering us towards another grant program called Advanced Assistance. Those things are going to take time, and we don't even have a design yet. So it's, you get funds to try to do the design, unless we can locally fund, we don't have the funds to, we have some funds, but right now we're dedicating those to fixing emergencies, sinkholes and road failures, like you're saying, that due to storm drains. And so, but we do need to have kind of a global perspective on the storm drain damage that was occurred, and it's not going to happen overnight. We're also looking at the waterways. The city council adopted the waterways management plan, money for that. So we're going to try to utilize that to leverage other funding to look at just looking at all the hydrology of our different creeks and how that impacts the city. A lot of questions still remain unanswered at this point because it takes a lot of money to do that. So, but we are pursuing those things. The storm drains on Main, we're going to do some repairs on Main to try and get some of those areas that silted up, and there's a couple that are completely rotted out that we need to repair. Like I mentioned, Sequoia Court that comes off the hillside, it goes through in between a couple homes. There's sinkholes developing, and the house is like within 10 feet of where this 36 inch storm drain is collapsing. So that's one that'll be going out to bid before the end of the year. We're working on design on that now. So, and again, all these we have put in as far as damages with FEMA. So there is that hope that we'll see some funds from that, but it's still so far out there, as far as we just had site inspections, last week, and we still have three or four others to do. That's how backed up they are on all these disasters. So, but Did I answer your question? I know I went kind of.
I think the answer was this is an extremely difficult problem. We're going to be stuck playing catch up for a little while, but that you are thinking about these things and doing the best you can. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, and the storm water issues, you know, we're obviously were dire in that time, and you know, I can think of a property owner approached me on Nutmeg, you know, have all that watershed up there coming down on Nutmeg coming down, and it flooded a couple homes, and we've got a 24-inch concrete, not CMP, which is great, because and we ran a camera through the concrete line, and it's just fine. It just couldn't keep up with the amount of water coming up the hillside. So, you know, he asked me, what are we going to do about it? I said, I don't know at this point. I mean, we don't have storm drain infrastructure to capture this water, and we have the one, you know, we have lots of metal pipes that are completely failed that we have to replace, or else they'll continue to erode, you know, and ruin more roadways or homes. And so it's very complex, and it's going to take several years to kind of address all these little by little. The existing storm drains are one thing. It's then how do we plan and build more and expand that network? I just don't know, you know, where we'll be able to find the funding for that. We don't have a funding source for storm drain. You know, it's not like water and sewer that have a enterprise fund. So it's certainly a challenge.
Thank you.
Is it possible at all to quantify the amount of deterioration due to the garbage trucks, the heavy trucks in the neighborhood? I mean, can you estimate? I don't know. I mean,
well, I guess as far as quantification, I don't know necessarily, but let me pull up a slide from. I think we showed it last year. You can kind of see comparatively vehicle loading on what it does to the pavement. And so for this figure, if you think of one vehicle unit as an SUV, at this time they said an S10 Blazer. I don't know if anyone knows the Chevy S10 Blazer. That's one vehicle unit, just a simple SUV. A two axle truck is like 442 Blazers going over it at once, and then it just incrementally, look at a garbage truck, we're close to 10,000. So if you look at number of trips for one vehicle, you magnify it times 10,000 every time a garbage truck goes by your home, and you can feel it. You know, it rumbles, and you can feel it in your home. That's, I think, as far as, you know, other quantification, I don't know. I mean,
that answers my question. I'm just wondering if we could calculate a trade-off. I mean, less maximum weight in the garbage truck versus more trips, that increases the expense of garbage pickup. But it might ultimately reduce the expense of repairing the roads associated with the heavier weight. It's a kind of a mathematical examination. I don't know if there's any utility to it, but it might be something to look into.
It's certainly an interesting conversation because we're dealing with pavements that weren't designed for this loading. I mean, if we were more, you know, if we were a city that had newer roads, you know, they clearly aren't having the issues that some of these cities that, you know, we have roads that were built in the 60s. So, and if there is no base course to kind of take that load from the asphalt, transfer it down, you know, it's just going to deflect. So any moisture just makes it even worse. You know, when you have a rainy day with garbage pickup day, that's the worst day for our roads. So, but it's complicated. I know that we have rate increase coming up soon. So, I know that part of that fee we do pay, it goes into mitigating this. Now, is it enough? I would say no, but like you said, it's a touchy subject because of the fees are already pretty high. So,
well, I had something similar crossed my mind, but a little toward the opposite conclusion, which is that at least in my neighborhood, it seems like almost every street has a different pickup day, and I'm thinking how much that increases the loads on the arterials that those trucks are using. And yes. I've always been curious about the reason for that, because it's not a big neighborhood. So I don't know why one street would be Monday and literally like two streets up, it's a different day. It seems like a lot of extra traffic on the routes that they're taking, the main arterial routes.
That's actually a good point. I think it'd be something for us to maybe discuss with our haulers. Is there a way to consolidate so that, like you said, they're not hitting collectors or arterials multiple times during the week, maybe just once. So.
I mean, I could only assume that they make more money that way, but it doesn't seem, it's very counterintuitive. I've lived in other neighborhoods and, you know, if you're within a certain radius, you're on the same day.
Okay. I had one thing I wanted to talk to you about, but as regards to damage, I remember when you were first here and you gave your little presentation about the impact of garbage trucks. I had a conversation with a couple of the city council people, and they were in the process of negotiating the next garbage contract. And I said, would you guys consider adding a corporate fee to repair payment caused by garbage trucks? And the basic answer was, that's an idea. And I saw that was never followed up on. So, because they didn't want to pay for it. The other one I wanted to talk about, I noticed on your maps there you had shown Greenwood, and one portion of it is poor and one portion of it was fair. How do you determine the difference between fair and poor? And I noticed that on the portion of Greenwood, which is shown as fair, where the right wheel of the garbage trucks run along there, there are places where, you know, you've got two or three inch pieces of asphalt bouncing around, and you know, I mean, obviously, I'd call it base failure is what I was learned to call it. Where, I mean, if the whole road was like that, you know, you wouldn't be able to drive on it. And so at what point what I also notice is this area is where the, you know, basically looks like a blender was taken to the pavement. Each month it seems to grow about a foot, maybe 2 feet. You know, there'll be a section of it and the ends of it go out another foot or so every month or two or whatever, and you've got about eight of those places on that portion of Greenwood you're calling fair. And the central portion where cars can stay on it, you know, that's really nice quality. You know, I would almost say good, but there's these strips. So how do you classify poor and fair?
So, yeah, thanks for the question. So as far as the PCI is concerned, this is here on the slide here is kind of the breakdowns between fair and poor or fair and good. That's the number. Now, as far as how is the number calculated, again, it's a lot of formulas that over time, you know, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and ASTM came together and came up with this, and our consultant has actual folks that are trained in pavement ratings. So there's a whole training process of how to rate pavement. And you don't look at the worst areas, you don't look at the best areas, you kind of get a representation of the whole entire. So there's a lot of field observation. It's not just, you know, driving somewhere and like, oh, we're right here, this looks like it's a good spot. It's there's a lot of measurement involved and even some judgment from a trained individual out in the field of where are the areas that best represent that section of pavement. So to your point, there might be a really bad area that just keeps getting worse and worse, and maybe it grows. The more it grows, the worse that PCI will be over time, but you have to look at the whole section of pavement.
Okay. Well, like I say, a lot of that pavement's got, you know, the hairline cracks are tight, and it, obviously it's performing well, but where the
yeah, and I'll just add, I know that a lot of these streets, you might have, you know, 2 inches in the middle, and then it's feathered out to the edges, and you don't have anything. So, and you know, where are the garbage trucks picking up on the shoulder, you know, in the parking area, and that mm-hmm. where the pavement thickness is probably the least, and that's where it's just getting, you know, destroyed.
Okay. Well, I was just was wondering about that. So, but as far as the yeah, they could do a corporate fee as part of the contract there, but when I would talk to people, there was no interest. They would say, good idea, and that was as far as it went.
Any additional board questions? Okay, then next we would ask if there's any public comment. I don't see anyone present here. Do we have anyone online that would like to comment?
Thank you, Chair Bill. There are currently no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, so I'm just gonna re-clarify, since we had a little discussion at the beginning, that the request of the board is to either recommend or not recommend that the City Council adopt the resolution that is a draft. It's called Attachment 1 on Agenda Item B1. So at this time, does anyone have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Could you clarify your motion?
To adopt for council for, to recommend that we move forward with the funds.
Okay, do we have a second? So we have a second, and I'll just restate the motion would be, and correct me if I'm wrong, please, to recommend that the City Council adopt the resolution that's included in as Attachment 1. Would the board like to have discussion at this time? Would you like to speak to your motion?
I'd like a... What happens, at what point do you have to bring this back to council if the roads change?
Thank you for the question.
No, well, it's council's the one who's going to have to say yes, we want the changes.
If the roads change, the resolution does not have to come back to council. It doesn't. It's a one-time resolution. What we have is this gets approved, and then the following year you report. I go into the CTC's database and I report the funds used, and you report exactly what roads you used it on. So there's record.
So any other board discussion? Would you like to comment, Jan, on the motion? There's no discussion, so I guess we can go ahead and call a vote. In favor?
I was going to say, would you like a roll call vote?
I don't think that's necessary. In favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Aye. Anyone opposed? All right, so the motion is passed. And then we would move on to agenda item B2. B2 has to do with some contract amendments for the Kings and Blanca Tanks Rehabilitation Project. Let's start if we have a presentation.
Thank you, Chair Beal. We do have a presentation. Looks like we lost power, AGP, on the screens out here. While I pull this up. Oh, there it goes. He walked in the room and it went on. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Beal. So this item is to discuss the contract amendments with Canon Corporation and Advantage Technical Services for a project that's in progress under construction currently for six of our water tanks in the city. So I'll go through initially the project scope, where we're at in the project, so the status, go through the funding, where we are today and where with these amendments, where we'll be, and then the recommendation. As far as project scope, I know it's been discussed at the PWAB in the past, certainly during capital project updates, but again, we have a project to rehabilitate exterior and interior coatings of Kings 1 and 2 and Blanca 1 and 2. That came out saying half, but it's actually 1 and 2 welded steel tanks. So there's two tanks at the Kings site off of Kings Way or King Street, and then two welded steel tanks at Blanca at the north end of town that are being completely rehabilitated, interior and exterior. This also, this project was expanded to include, and this was last year, we expanded it to include seismic and structural upgrade of Blanca 3 and 4. The welded steel tanks are more recent and have those means already in place, but the Blanca 3 and 4 tanks, being old bolted steel tanks, were built in the 60s and were just sitting on a gravel with, they did have a concrete tank ring, but it was not fixed. So we've taken the opportunity to upgrade those to be bolted, and they're brand new, rehabilitated bolted steel tanks. It's also to improve access and safety features for all of the six tanks, add mixers, new level indicators, and other features that are used by utility operators to service the tanks. And then part of this project scope was also to have a long-term maintenance agreement with the company who is qualified to do repairs. Granted, there is a warranty period on the tanks for a year after the project, but 10 years gives us much better scope of keeping up with the maintenance of these tanks, and certainly incentivizes the company to do a very good job of during construction. So, and then we did add the Ridgeway tank to that plan as well, which is in better shape than the other tanks were. So as far as current status, the Kings 2 tank, which receives the state water directly into it at the Kings tank site, is completed. Blanca 1 and 2, the work is completed, the coatings. Blanca 3 and 4, which is the bolted steel tanks, the tanks themselves are recently completed, and the disinfection is currently in process. So those will be put back into service very soon. And then soon after that, Kings 1 tank will be drained, and we'll start work on doing all the recoating probably in October. It's looking like more like October. And it's going to be about 4 months to get that done. It's a very big tank. It's over 1 million gallons and definitely in great need of this work. So the rehab inside and out requires a lot of oversight as far as inspection, doing coatings and you know, the process of doing this. You have to remove the old coatings and prepare the surface, and then, you know, you can only do it during certain temperature ranges. There's just a lot to keep track of. So, and then the maintenance agreement starts after project completion. That's pictures from inside Kings 2 when they drained it. You can see how the water level shifts and the staining and a lot of corrosion over time. Even worse on the outside of these tanks, you can see how it pits and it just, you know, loses the metal over time and needs to be protected. Again, I think a common theme in the city that I've seen is just a lot of deferred maintenance over decades and decades. So it will be great to have 6 tanks in, you know, prime shape, our water supply, you know, to help our water supply situation. The Kings 2 is off to the left. That's kind of when they're finishing up. You can see the exterior. And then this is on the right is on top of one of the Blanca welded steel tanks after the coating was finished. Here's some pictures of the new tank rings and the bolted steel tanks, Blanca 3 and 4. There's the inside to the left where they've put in some water there for a leak test. And then looking up towards the roof and the rafters on the right. And the completed tank, one of them full picture there with the fill line. So as far as funding breakdown, the original budgeted amount for the entire construction project was just under $2.7 million. In 2022-23, there was an increase due to, as I mentioned before, the situation with the bolted steel tanks. In, you know, we're taking them apart and doing all this work. We need to upgrade the foundations. And then there was also some additional contingency added at that point because the coating work has been much more involved than anticipated initially in the original budgeted amount. So that brings our total budget for the project to $3.3 million. The contractor piece, so the actual contractor who's doing the work, STS or Superior Tank Services, their contract is $2.8 million of that amount. As far as what we're calling construction support, so what we're reviewing tonight, the original Canon contract, who is overseeing construction management and resident engineer services, really managing the contract process. It's a pretty significant project with a lot of, certainly early on, there was a lot of requests for information and potential issues that had to be resolved with the design. They handle any changes that come up. They handle any submittal review. Their original contract was $106,708. We're asking for an additional $30,373 to get us through the end of the King's Tank 1. ATS, who is more specialized, they're doing the actual inspection of the coating, of the sandblasting, of making, you know, measuring the temperature, humidity, making sure the contractor has got their dehumidifiers and all the things that they need to do to
follow the specifications. Their original contract was $118,000, and most of that was used up for King's Tank 2 and the Blanca 1 and 2. You can see we're asking for almost 100%. And a lot of that had to do with, in my opinion, just not knowing how bad the both interior and exterior of these tanks were and how much oversight it would require. Sure, we have a contractor who's given us a firm bid on doing the work and performing that, but when you have outside professional services, they work on an hourly basis, and that's all approved by me in this case, by us, as far as giving them the authority to go out and do the inspection. And so, you know, that work has required more than we had anticipated. You know, I think, you know, at looking this, I would, you know, if I were looking at it without outside knowledge, well, is that work, you know, something that is the contractor doing it right? And so we've had some issues with the contractor early on that we've worked through. So I would say some of that was due to really having to deal with some, you know, some issues meeting specifications and the contractor having to do work over at their own cost, but then we still have to oversee the work. And we certainly want the project done right. So, and this company, ATS, is all they do is these tank coating type. They dive tanks to inspect tanks. So it's something that they're very good at. And I think it's something that's needed for our last tank. So we're asking for the PWAP to make that recommendation to council to approve these contract amendments, bringing our total construction support to $355,774, which on a, you know, almost $3 million project, I would say is not out of line. Usually, you know, design can be 10% of cost, and then your CM can be 10 to 15% of your cost. It really depends on the type of work, and being that this is quite specialized, it certainly seems appropriate. So, and we still have money left over in the budget. So our estimated cost at project completion would be $3.1 million with about $127,000 left. God forbid if there are other issues that come up. I would hope not. We're on our last tank, so hopefully things go well and we don't have to come back and ask for any additions to the construction contract. But that's the current funding breakdown. And as I mentioned, we're asking for a recommendation from the PWAB to advise council to pass. There's no resolution. I apologize for that. This is just to approve the contract amendments, which are in the this or our attachments to the staff report. So if you have any questions, I can answer those.
Okay, thank you. Let's go ahead with questions from the board.
You know, Erica, I'm just sort of curious. Does this file, it gets presented to the city council, I guess the same file that we read. Do you present it to the city council or is that not necessary?
Thank you for the question. So we bring these items to the PWAB as regular business to have discussion and see this as the opportunity to talk through, being that the PWAB is more the venue to talk through technical issues and contract issues and ask questions. That doesn't mean that it wouldn't be discussed at City Council, but typically contracts are a consent item agenda that is intended to, you know, be passed as far as consent. Now that's up to the council to pull items if they want to discuss, but there's no plan to have a formal presentation for City Council.
Who handled negotiations of the contracts?
So, thank you for the question. As far as the contract amendments,
mm-hmm.
These two, I handled them.
Okay.
With the two consultants.
Okay, thank you.
And they are broken down with hourly rates and hours, so it's not lump sum. They are only as needed. So, believe they're padded to be able to. We don't see us going over those at all. I think if anything, we'll go under for
okay.
those.
No, yeah, right. I just was curious. Yeah. I've seen contracts, but you wondered who was negotiating it, so. That's good to hear.
I assume they're claiming this work's already been done, that they're amending the contract with both the construction managers and the engineers. And you oversaw the billing for this, and is there any room for negotiation on this?
So the work hasn't been done. I don't know if I'm understanding your question, but the work for this tank has not been done yet. So. Okay.
My question is that they're amending the contract for their services, both the engineering and the construction management companies, and they're claiming that their costs have gone over by this amount of money, $100,000 and $30,000. So that work they're claiming has already been done, or are they anticipating this is going to cost us much more?
They're anticipating it's going to cost this much more, so.
Go ahead.
and then in your negotiations, Eric, with them, since you made this chart about for the out breaking it down hourly, you understand and agree with them that this is what it's going to cost? Is that what you're saying?
So. As far as total cost, I mean, we certainly hope it's going to be under that, but the rates match what their original contract was for, and in our due diligence when we do contracts initially and even amendments, we look at other companies and what they, you know, their billing rates are to make sure that they're in line. So, yeah, that's something we look at when we look at these amendments. But, the total cost, the tank coating is more expensive than I would like and hope, but it's a crucial element in that if there are any little pinholes or anything, anything that's not caught, those things can just explode as far as even on a 10-year maintenance contract. I mean, you're in year 11 and a pinhole can really expand quickly in a tank, and you might not see it all. It's, you know, it can go interior, and so especially with metal tanks, it's just a risk.
Thank you, Eric.
Oh, the other question I had is this. Are these funds out of the enterprise fund?
They are, yes. Okay. This is dedicated water funds for this project.
Thank you.
doubling the price of the contract does seem like a lot. You made aware earlier in the process that there would be a significant increase, because it sounds like this is all being attributed to the very last tank. Is that accurate? It's just the one tank that costs twice as much?
It's from work that was done. So, I mean, to your point, Member Hill, we saw this issue early. Now we still have money in their contract to continue work, but we won't be able to get through all of Kings 2 at the burn rate that they were going. So I saw the issue early on and was concerned. They actually had a turnover in staff, and possibly due to some of the requirements we had in this, they brought in a new team member, the contractor, that is. So we've had some real challenges with this project and had to kind of negotiate going through that. And thankfully, like, one of them being also cost of materials we're going on almost 2 years on this project, and material costs have skyrocketed, and yet they have not, we've made it clear that they're not getting extra money for cost escalation, because a lot of the time duration was because of their work. So I think it's, in my opinion, I did think about that in this increase in cost for utilizing this professional service. Well, we could go to the contractor and try to, hey, you're costing us more money, but I know that in the materials and what they've lost on this project is significant, and we're happy that they have a new team in place that has been much easier to work with, and Blanca 1 and 2 went a lot smoother than Kings 2.
Just to kind of clarify then, so it sounds like the contractor, didn't do a good job, which cost more inspections and more staff time with Canon and the ATS, right? And so moving forward for the last tank, do we have any kind of guarantee from the contractor that this isn't going to happen again? And if it does, they'll be responsible for paying for the extra inspections and ATS's time, or Canon and ATS's time. So when the project's completed, Canon and ATS aren't asking for more money due to the contractor not performing correctly and, having failed inspections, is what it sounds like.
Thank you for the point. I think what we would probably do is that we're tracking working days, and that if they cannot complete this on schedule, because it's been very clear, when we start this tank, how many working days are going to have left in their contract. If we go past that, then we will start liquidated damages, which would be our means of recovering that cost.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Do we have anyone that would like to make a public comment?
There are currently no raised hands in the queue.
Okay. Then we can move along, and the board is being asked whether to recommend approval of these changes, is my understanding. Would anyone like to make a motion?
I move that we approve the amendments to the contract as negotiated.
I'll second.
Okay, John, would you like to make any comments to your motion? Any other board discussion about the motion or this matter?
So I would just ask that we you know, hold the contractor liable moving forward for any other staff time or, you know, or the ATS or Canon time, you know, and we kind of hold them to the stipulation of, you know, completing on time.
Noted. Thank you.
All right. So we have a motion to recommend approval of these contract changes. Let's take a vote. All in favor?
Aye. Yes.
Aye. Anyone opposed? All right. So the motion is passed, and that concludes agenda item B2. So we are almost near the end of our meeting today. Future agenda items will include local roadway safety plan workshop, the WRF indirect potable water reuse program, beachcomber sewer main and beach tract sewer mains replacement update. Do any board members wish to propose agenda items for future consideration?
I do. At yesterday's Planning Commission meeting, one of the members of the public mentioned a tree on Quintana that's being removed, a healthy tree, but I think it's being removed because it presents some sort of difficulty with the sidewalk and curb improvements. I don't really have any of the details. And so I'd like sometime in the future to examine how that decision process is made. Essentially, I suspect that there's a calculation as to how much money it would cost to do the repair with the tree in place versus how much it would cost to do without the tree. And I'm just wondering if there's any kind of monetary value attached to the tree when those calculations are made. So that's, I'd like to, because I like trees. And I do think they're, you know, essential and valuable to the entire community.
We'll definitely make a note to add that as a future agenda item.
And I'd like to see an update on FEMA added to the future agenda items too. It doesn't, yeah, I mean, it's going to be much more than the usual Public Works Department budget. So we might as well get briefed on that too.
Noted.
Anything else? Does Public Works have any other comments or future agenda items?
Well, I do want to note that the local roadway safety plan workshop will not be at a PWAB meeting. It'll probably be a standalone meeting. So just you can strike that out as far as on the agenda. However, after our workshops, we will be coming back to PWAB with kind of the results of all the analysis and public engagement and present some potential countermeasures or projects or findings from that analysis.
Well, we look forward to that. So if there's nothing else, we can go ahead and adjourn for today. Thanks, everybody, and everyone who watched virtually or attended in person. The next regular meeting for the Public Works Advisory Board is October 18th. And that's at 5:30 p.m., same location, and also available virtually. Thank you.